House State Affairs together at 8:10 at ease.
House State Affairs Committee, please come to order if we haven't already done it. Please call the roll.
Representative Christ Tompkins.
Here.
Representative Gaddis.
Here.
Representative Hughes.
Here.
Representative Isaacson. Representative Keller.
Here.
Representative Millett. Chair Lynn.
Here. And I have a note here. Representative Isaacson is excused, and so is Representative Millett. Got it? All righty. Okay. Today we have, it's so interesting, we have one thing on the agenda today, at HB 127, an ombudsman. So we're going to get right at it. Let's have the, do you want to make a couple comments on it before we start, just to bring it up to date of where we are, what we have to do?
Okay, Mr. Chair. Where we're at is we amended the past version and included that change. And a few more that...
Don't say that change. What change?
Well, we will get that described to us by the Ombudsman's Representative Beth as she comes forward. But we, what I'd like to do is move that we have the State Affairs CS 28LS0088 Tango. I'd like to move that before us for presentation and discussion.
Okay, I'll object for discussion.
And with that, I would just...
Okay, please, Ombudsman, please come forward. Introduce yourself, please, and just bring it up to date where we are right now and the changes in this CS, then we'll go from there.
Thank you. To the chair, this is Beth Leibowitz. I'm an assistant ombudsman with the State Office of the Ombudsman, and I believe Ombudsman Linda Lord Jenkins is going to be available on teleconference, so questions can be directed to her as well.
Okay, thank you.
And as I understand it, the CS that is under discussion has three changes or three different components. The first one is that the reference to residential child care facilities and residential psychiatric treatment facilities has been removed per the amendment that was passed last week. And that's, you know, that's a done deal. And there is a proposal, and we have asked, our office has asked for two changes in the language of the bill. And in the current section 6.
That's in version T, I
think. In version T, yes. In the in version T, Tango's section 6, under amendment to 160A4, that's 2455-160A4, the language in the existing statute refers to records of every state agency, and everywhere else in the ombudsman statute, references to what the ombudsman will do or has authority to do refer to an agency, and then the ombudsman's scope is included in the is basically bounded by the definition of agency. So we looked at that and realized that if our jurisdiction expands to cover any non-state entities, our records access was not going to expand with it. And so we asked the Ledge Legal to consult about removing the word state from the phrase access to records of every... Well, basically records, access to records of every agency, which also brings it back into line with the rest of the statute.
Any question about that particular change? If not, please continue.
We also asked for a change in version Tango. That'll be in Section 7. And this is the provision that we've asked for, basically preventing waiver of attorney-client privilege or attorney work product privilege of an agency chooses to share privileged information with us during an investigation. We have asked to add a sentence to this because then the sentence that we're asking for is the ombudsman may not disclose a privileged communication provided under this subsection. That seems quite self-evident given that 2455-160B already says that we will not disclose a confidential record received from an agency. However, the definition of record for our statute expressly excludes attorney-client privileged material and attorney work product. So we've asked for basically a may not disclose phrase to be added to the new subsection so that it is matching what we already have.
Okay, any questions from the committee on that? Representative Hughes.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was reading through the statutes and the investigation procedures, and it seemed like that was already covered, but maybe I'm missing something. And I'm sure it doesn't hurt to put it in again if I'm missing something, but it says the ombudsman shall maintain confidentiality with respect to all matters and the identities of the complainants or witnesses coming before the ombudsman, except insofar as disclosures may be necessary to enable the ombudsman to carry out duties and to support recommendations. However, the ombudsman may not disclose a confidential record obtained from an agency.
Any response to that?
To the chair and Representative Hughes, is we thought that was pretty well covered, too, until I took another look at it. And because the phrasing that you've just read refers to the ombudsman may not disclose a confidential record. And, well, record seems pretty all-encompassing, except that if you go to 2455.330, which is our definitions section, the definition of record as used for that this chapter proceeds to say that attorney-client work product or attorney work product and attorney-client privileged communications are not records for purposes of the ombudsman statute. And so we want that sort of material, if given to us, to be just as protected as any other material that we receive that's confidential. Hence the new language.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. And the word communication as opposed to the word record, so it's more all-encompassing. So that makes sense. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, please continue.
Okay. And the third component of the changes that are under discussion right now is current in version Tango, sections 3, 4, and 5. And these have been, I believe they've been offered by Representative Keller's office as to be discussed. And I am sorry to say that our office does not support these changes.
Okay, would you explain why they don't have the, I guess, Reverend Keller
or Jim
or somebody respond. Give us your objections, please.
Okay. To the chair.
Three.
Thank you. Okay. Is the section 3 basically provides for the chair of the Administrative Regulation Review Committee to be able to request the investigation by the Ombudsman's office. And I have to admit that isn't particularly objectionable since it's still discretionary, but what this does tend to do is create two classes of complainant: the legislative requester and all the other complainants that we serve. Because, yes, it's discretionary, but pardon my saying so, but a legislative request is the 800-pound gorilla in a room full of complainants. And so it looks to me like we will have, you know, Class A complainant, which apparently is the chair of the Administrative Regulation Review Committee, and then all the individual citizen complainants. And our office was created specifically to serve individuals who do not have other recourse. That was what the office was created to do in the first place. And that is our mandate. The legislature has avenues, including the ability to subpoena, to hold hearings, to request audits, that are considerably more power and recourse than those individual complainants have. And so I don't think this is a particularly helpful role for the Ombudsman's office to take on, because I think it will be to the detriment of our original mandate, which is to respond to individual citizens.
Okay. Let me have Mr. Pound. You can stay there. Just don't battle each other there.
Yeah.
would you respond to that? I want to take each of these. You said you had three parts that you didn't support. I want to do one at a time.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Jim Pound, staff representative Keller. deal with Section 3 at this particular point in time on page 2. Essentially, we did this with the intent that quite often the Administrative Regulation Review Committee, because of the Alive decision in particular, and our...
What decision?
The Alive decision, which basically...
I have no idea what that is.
The Alive decision is what came when it came down. Formerly, the legislature was able to remove a regulation by resolution. The Alive decision ended that. We have to pass a bill in order to remove a regulation.
So we had to, okay.
Which obviously doesn't happen because you have to get it through both houses, and then you have to take it to the person who supported the regulation, who is the governor, so you have to have a veto-proof bill before you can even remove a regulation. So quite often the Reg Review Committee gets shut down by agencies because their attitude is, we don't care, what are you going to do about it? And the ombudsman comes after them, it's a different animal. And that was the perspective we were looking at there, that quite often when the Reg Review Committee is shut down by the departments, and which happens quite often, believe it or not, there's another option for the chair of the committee.
Okay. Would you like to respond to that?
To the chair, again, the legislature will essentially be the class, or rather I should say the Administrative Regulation Review Committee, because this is not the legislature as a whole. In fact, as I understand the bill, it is the chair of the committee, and so it does not appear to be something that is even a request per a majority decision of the committee. It appears to be a mechanism for a unilateral decision by the chair of that committee, which I have to admit seems unparalleled, since the closest parallel I can see is legislative audit. And if they are asked to do a special audit, they are asked after a majority vote of the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee, you know, basically deciding that it's an important enough request to send it on. So here there does not appear to even be a committee vote. But the main issue that I'm looking at is that this will basically be a legislator's request for investigation, which will be... You know, essentially, it'd probably be a fairly work-intensive request. I don't expect these to be simple and straightforward investigative issues if they come to us from the committee. But, and they will basically be a Class A of complainant. And I don't think that will be to the benefit of our ability to serve the individual complainants that we were created to serve in the first place.
Okay. Representative Christ Tompkins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Pound, if the purpose of this section 3 on page 2 is to get agencies to back down, to use your phrasing, when they aren't otherwise backing down, how will the ombudsman have the power to have agencies abandon or loosen regulations that the chair of the Admin Regulation Review Committee wants to be gone or wants to be changed? And a second question is, why just the chair of the Admin Regulation Review Committee?
Through the chair, Mr. Chris Tompkins.
Identify yourself.
Jim Pound for Representative Keller's office. Again, it's a situation of where it's just another tool in the toolbox. You know, the regulation process that we have in the state of Alaska right now is out of control, has been for years. And it doesn't matter who's working in the third floor. Regulations are promulgated that quite often have no effect of law. They do not mimic the law. They do not interpret the law. They become law. And the Admin Reg Review Committee really has no investigative authority whatsoever, other than holding a hearing. And that's as far as they can go. They can hold a hearing and let everybody know about it, but that's the end of it. The ombudsman has the ability to write a report and file that report with the department, and it becomes more of a public record that there is a problem, that the public will know from that ombudsman's report that it has been investigated, and they will create documents that are usable in court, whereas the legislature's documents quite often, just because it's a public hearing, aren't.
Mr. Chair.
Continue if you like.
I understand that intent. That seems to be more a testament to the purpose or lack of purpose of the Admin Regulation Review Committee, and maybe that should be examined more wholesale, but I'm struggling to see how making the Ombudsman the investigatory agency of the Admin Regulation Review Committee would solve that sort of larger problem about regulatory oversight, but thank you for the explanation.
If I could answer the second question.
Yeah, then we're going to go to...
All right, the chair was just so it came from one person. It not doesn't necessarily mean it is a unilateral decision by one person, and we can certainly change the wording to make that appropriate for the entire committee. I'm not concerned with that part of it at all.
Okay. Lieutenant Gaddis, and then did you want to comment after that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do not sit on the Reg Review Committee, nor have I participated, so I may be out of the loop. But my thinking is that couldn't you, as the chair of Reg Review, could you not also, maybe not the word file, but certainly you can have a report. You can send that report to all of the legislators. You can put it in the newspaper. I mean, you can spread it, spread the word everywhere. I mean, I guess I'm struggling with the fact, and I kind of piggyback what Representative Tompkins, Christ Tompkins, was stating. I think, without the knowledge of having sat on the Reg Review, that there are other ways that Reg Review could get that word out. And while I agree that there are probably some regulations that need to be looked at and pulled back, I just think that there's another avenue, recognizing that there are a lot of people that need to be served by the Ombudsman. I would hate to stack on to that what I think Reg Review should be doing. And I guess I just want to make that comment. I don't know that there's much of a state of a question in there. I apologize.
Thank you, Reverend Keller.
Yeah, thank you. A couple things. One is the Ombudsman, Linda Lord Jenkins, her mother is had a serious medical condition, and that's why she's not here. I just wanted to express that, so you may want to know. And I also want to, in a way, I want to apologize. I want to justify what I've done here with this change. I want to apologize because I know the chair wants to move this today if possible. And my intent is not to slow down the bill, and I do think we need to make a policy decision and move on. Part of the reason I am including this change, it has to do with the Ombudsman's office, not Reg Review. We're not trying to fix Reg Review with the Ombudsman bill. What we're trying to fix is the fact that we are, in effect, isolated from what the Ombudsman does by our choice. We have made the Ombudsman's office very independent, and we want them to be independent because we don't want politics involved. We want them to be able to investigate a clean system. However, they are part of us. They are part of the legislative body. They're our investigative arm. And I come at this with the firm belief that where we spend money, there's a potential for administrative acts that cause problems for the citizens of Alaska. And having a venue for them to take a complaint and to get an investigation is really, really important. And I think the legislature is not enough in tune with that ability and responsibility that we have. And I, by putting this in there, what it does, it just builds a link, and I don't think it's a threatening link at all, because it's permissive. You know, we don't intimidate that bad, I don't think. And the Ombudsman does work for us, after all. You know, we control, but in a sense of, as we have a legal minimum here in front of us, it points out, in a sense that we appoint, we pay, and we can remove. But we also have the responsibility to set up the laws that operate the Ombudsman's office. So it's totally within our jurisdiction to do this. And it is a way that will increase communication, and it will increase, the effectiveness of the interaction between the Ombudsman's office and the legislature. If the Ombudsman declines to investigate according to the standards we have laid down by law, I think we need more immediate feedback on the ones that are not investigated. Obviously, resources are a problem, with keeping up with the complaints this is just another way to build a communication and the interaction between the ombudsman and the admin review committee, which is, I would point out, both houses. I represented both houses. I think it's a good fix. But
okay, Representative Hughes.
Yes, and I have a couple questions in order to make that policy call. So thank you. I appreciate the sponsor bringing it forward. And this question is for Leibowitz. Is that correct?
Leibowitz.
Yes. My folks' name is Leibowitz. So sorry about that, Leibowitz. The 800-pound gorilla in the room. Is there anything right now that would prevent a member of the legislature, whether it be the admin reg review or not, requesting an investigation regarding a set of regulations or a particular regulation? Is that prevented specifically right now? As an individual, not as a representing the legislature.
To Representative Hughes, through the chair, this is Beth Leibowitz. There is not a prohibition on that. As an individual, a legislator could not be a complainant for an issue that did not actually affect them personally. However, a legislator could certainly come to our office and say, this looks like an issue that we think the ombudsman should look at, and we would like the ombudsman to initiate an investigation, basically on the ombudsman's own motion. So no, a legislator cannot become a complainant for an issue that is not their own personal issue, but they could certainly ask the ombudsman at any time to decide that the issue warrants an ombudsman-initiated investigation. And in fact, we have had cases like that. And if Ombudsman Laura Jenkins is on the line, I would be happy to defer that to her.
Go ahead.
So if it doesn't personally impact the legislature, you could still decide to take it on. Is that correct?
To the chair? Yes, that is correct.
Oh, okay. And then I have another question as far as what this amendment, what this would do the way it's written right now in version Tango. If the admin reg review chair requested an investigation, you perform the investigation, provided a report. Once that report comes out, please remind me and maybe the others if they're not remembering, because I'm not, is there any obligation that the agency has to respond to that report? I'm thinking, I know with budget and audit, you know, they get the information and then they have to come back and respond how they're going to correct things. Is that required after you issue a report?
To Representative Hughes, through the chair, yes, as part of the report process, agencies are required to respond. If they do not respond, we basically will issue a final report anyhow, but they are expected to respond under our statute. Basically, they're asked to respond to a confidential preliminary report, and the final report incorporates their response to the findings and recommendations.
Follow up.
So then their response becomes public as well, correct?
To the chair, that is correct.
And a follow-up.
Go ahead.
So I would just, I know Representative Gaddis had a very good point that there's nothing now that would prevent something to be made public by the admin reg chair. However, this pointing out a problem and then the response would not be part of that public. So it does add another ability. I mean, there would be, I could see, a little bit difference than just the way it is right now, because that report and response would both be out there and the public would know if the problem will or will not be addressed. So and I'll just finish that thought, because I think of the ombudsman not having enforcement authority, which when I was reading through things last night about the Bar Association, there was some mention of enforcement, and I don't see the ombudsman as having any enforcement authority. It's simply to investigate, but it does require then a response, so the idea is that hopefully things will be fixed.
Thank you. Anybody else on the top? We're going to take a short at ease. I want to discuss some potential procedures here, not the bill itself or the section. Any other comments on this?
To the chair, this is Beth Leibowitz again. is the representative Hughes is correct. We do not have enforcement authority. I'm not entirely sure what our report could do that cannot be done by the Administrative Regulation Review Committee as a legislative committee with the power to require agency employees to come and testify and, in fact, respond directly to the committee on the public record, you know, pretty, right there in person. You know, I'm not entirely sure what it is that an ombudsman's report is supposed to accomplish that the committee does not have the power to accomplish, especially given the fact that the legislature as a whole has staff with the ledge audit, legislative legal research, and legislative research, and legislators also have their own staff available to them. I am not sure what the ombudsman's office is able to do on behalf of a legislative committee that cannot already be done by that committee, especially as compared to the complainants that we were created to serve who have none of those resources available to them.
Now, I'm going to ask Mr. Pound to make any closing comments on this section 3, I guess it is.
Thank you.
Then we're going to go to 4 and 5 and see what happens there, and then we'll punt or something at that point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jim Pound again from Representative Keller's office. In all honesty, the Admin Reg Review Committee does not have the ability. They can subpoena staff from the administration, and they can put them in front of a committee, and that staff can sit there and go to the fifth. And that's the end of it.
Okay. Representative Geddes.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Pound, again, I've not been on reg review, but what would be the difference if they can plead the fifth? Why wouldn't they be able to do that through the ombudsman? I mean, what would be the difference?
The chair, there is statutory language for the ombudsman. They're not permitted to do that.
They're not
It's a different type of investigation. It's a closed investigation. It only becomes public when the full report is done. In the admin reg, it's a public process.
So, Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
So, through the chair, so what I'm hearing you say is through the ombudsman, they cannot participate in their constitutional right to plead the fifth, but through the reg review, they can. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. Representative Goddard.
Interesting. Thank you.
Interesting point. Reverend Christ Tompkins.
I know we don't want to get caught up on Section 3, but that really got me. The U.S. Someone's constitutional rights are suspended when the ombudsman opens up an investigation. It's difficult for me to understand how that works.
Is your representative Craig Tompkins? I don't either, but I mean, that's the way the statute is written, and the ombudsman has an authority that permits them to go in and investigate and bring witnesses in a closed environment. You know, in a behind closed doors, so to speak, environment, and talk to them and get information.
Follow up.
Go ahead.
To your knowledge, has the Admin Reg Review Committee encountered a spate of state employees who have, in fact, pleaded the fifth in response to committee questions?
Through the chair, you talking about the ombudsman or the excuse me, through the chair.
The Admin Reg Review Committee.
Let's see, the Department of Education, the Fire Marshal. Just off the top of my head, and these are from my experiences working with Admin Reg Review, that they have basically just said, you know, we're not gonna talk.
Go ahead. Admin Guy Tompkins.
Did they plead the fifth, or did they not talk to you? And there seems to be a difference between those two.
To the chair of Democrats, they refused to come to a hearing. We would have had to have subpoenaed them to have brought them to come before the committee.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to do it for you.
Linda Lord Jenkins is on the line, but let me go to Representative Geddes first. Let me go to Linda Lord Jenkins, and she can been listening probably in frustration here. Go ahead.
And thank you, Linda, for listening in frustration. But it begs a question. I have to ask this. So we hear that legislators have the power of subpoena. So if you won't have, if somebody won't come to your, and I apologize, Mr. Pound, I know that you have worked as staff for reg review, so I consider you certainly more of an expert. But if they refuse to come, why didn't you subpoena them?
At the through the chair, at the particular time, the chair of the committee didn't think it was worth the trouble.
Okay.
Thank you.
Representative Keller?
Yeah, I just, if I could, Mr. Chair, somebody's called in an online listening to the proceedings here, and you don't realize that you're being heard rustling paper or dripping water or whatever it is, but it's distracting here, so if you would check your mute button. Thanks.
Thank you. We have Linda Lloyd-Jenkins, Ombudsman, online. She's been listening to this conversation. Are you still there?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I am.
You identify yourself and make your comments.
Well, I've been taking some notes, and I think I'm the one who's making the water running noise. I'm typing into my laptop. One of the things that
we're going to subpoena the laptop.
said that he believed that an ombudsman report can be submitted to the court, and I apologize if I'm mischaracterizing that, if I misunderstood that statement. The ombudsman does not, by statute, submit reports to the court. We have immunity from testifying, and the ombudsman in Alaska and all ombudsmen, including in the USOA Model Act, believe that they should not be testifying in court, and so we have not submitted reports that to a court venue. Individual litigants in a court matter, if they've gone to the ombudsman, could present a report to the court, but we don't go to the court and testify to support that. So that's one thing. Regarding our powers, we do, of course, have the power of subpoena. I don't know that I've ever heard the power of subpoena discussed in the context of taking the Fifth, because generally that's in a criminal context, and our reviews are administrative reviews. The authority that the ombudsman has is the authority to make a good case for a matter and suggest recommended fixes, and we hope that the agencies will agree with us and agree to fix a problem that we have uncovered, but we cannot force them to take any action whatsoever. We have the option at the point where an agency either declines to make a fix to a problem we've uncovered, or they make a fix and they've done a fine job of it, we always have the option to publicly release information that to the governor, to the legislature, to the media, sometimes all three, and that often is the power of persuasion that is a tipping that will provide a tipping point for agencies to in good faith try and fix a problem. It is not releasing a report to the media is something that is at the discretion of the individual ombudsman. My office in my tenure has released reports to the media on two occasions. One occasion the media wasn't all that interested, and the other one it got a lot of play, and it was a win-win for all involved, because the agency had agreed to repair their regulations. But we cannot force an agency to do anything other than persuade the power of persuasion and the power of the potential of news coverage.
Thank you. Any questions? Any questions for her? Stay on the line. We've got two more of this part of the bill to go through. I'm going to delay further discussion on this. We want to hear from, I believe it's section 4 and 5. Then we may debate this part of the whole bill if we ever get to that part. Section 4, I think. You had an objection to Section 4?
To the chair, this is Beth Leibowitz, and our office objects to Section 4 because it basically, it's not clear to us what legislative purpose can possibly be served by giving out the name of an individual complainant to a chair of a legislative committee. We certainly want to report to the legislature about problems with agencies, whether small or large, but it's not clear to me how that is served in any way by naming the individual complainant when we close a complaint. And I also would like to point out that our individual complainants are constituents, and we can certainly refer them to legislators. We could explain committee structures. We can give them contact information. But the decision to contact or not contact a legislator should really belong to the constituent. It's not the ombudsman's proper role to be in the middle of that relationship and to be making that communication for someone who should be making it themselves, frankly.
Are you talking about the complainant now?
Yes, I'm talking about the complainant.
Doesn't it say here, if the complainant consents?
Yes.
Oh, I'm misreading this.
To the chair, that is for the complainant to consent, but the point that I'm trying to make is that even if the complainant is consenting, this is a contact that, as a constituent, we would strongly encourage a complainant to make on their own behalf rather than for the ombudsman to give their name to a legislative committee chair of a committee that, frankly, many of the complainants will never have heard of. And also, it's not clear what possible legitimate purpose this serves. I would like to remind the committee that the USOA, the United States Ombudsman Association standards, talk about the ombudsman's obligation of confidentiality, except as necessary to carry out the investigation and support recommendations. And it's not clear to me how offering the complainant's name, even with the complainant's consent, it's not clear to me how this serves any of the ombudsman's actual functions or better informs the legislature about the nature of problems with state government.
It goes to this, and I don't mind waiting for
Mr. Pound
to speak.
Mr. Chairman, Jim Pounding here from Representative McCullough. The reason we put this in there was, as much as anything, is an identifier for, and the reason we use the Admin Reg Review Committee here is it's a one-stop type operation as opposed to going to, if they're doing an investigation into Health and Social Services, having to take it to the chair of the Health and Social Services Committee, or if it's whatever. I mean, it's that type of scenario. We figured that was a one-stop for them. The purpose for adding the individual's name, if the individual consents to release their name, is if someone in the legislature or the Admin Reg Review Committee wants to further investigate this from some perspective, they have someone to go to and say, would you like us to continue looking into this? Without that name, you're looking at a blank document that references a department, and that's it. But again, it's up to the individual complainant to release that information, to say that it's all right for the ombudsman to pass that information onto the legislature.
I see. Representative Gaddis.
Yes, and this is for Ms. Leibowitz. I guess as I sit here listening to the consent and going through, I guess at the end of the day, I see the ombudsman's role to help the citizens of Alaska, and I guess in that, the question is, if there's a citizen that has either gone to the ombudsman or hasn't gone and said, Representative Gaddis, I need your help. I want to go through the ombudsman. Can you work with me? What would be the downside for myself and my representative to say, Ms. Leibowitz, this person has a very big concern, and I'm kind of bird-dogging it with them, and I would like you to follow up. You certainly should have and could have done that all on your own. You didn't need me. But my constituent would like to kind of keep me in the same loop, and here is their consent. Now, I would ask you, that's what I see this particular portion alluding to. I don't know that it's clear, but because this is a two-part question, so the first part is, could you comment on the first part?
To the chair and Representative Gaddis, this is Beth Leibowitz, and If I understand you correctly, what you're describing is something that already happens. If a complainant contacts us and we realize, usually because the complainant has told us, or sometimes because a legislator's office has in fact referred the complainant to us, it is routine and expected for us to say, are you okay with us talking about your complaint with the staff of legislator, you know, Representative Gaddis, Representative Kelly? Would you like us to talk to the legislative office about your complaint as we work on it? And they will generally say yes, and so therefore we share the information with the complainant's permission.
A follow-up?
Yes.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, that's already happening. That isn't a problem. Given the consent of the constituent, that's not a problem.
To the Chair and Representative Gaddis, as you're describing it, no, it is not a problem. This bill appears to be doing something rather different in that it says that when we have closed a complaint, basically, for instance, when we have declined an inmate's complaint because they have not actually tried to use the grievance system provided within the Department of Corrections, when we have just sent them a letter declining the complaint, we will also ask for their permission to give their name to the chair of the Administrative Regulations Review Committee. And I have to admit, I'm a little bewildered about what purpose that's supposed to serve.
And I don't want to belabor this, but I guess my question wasn't specific to the reg review, but it was more about a constituent and their representative going through you with the proper consent form. So that's already done. Certainly the other side of that is a constituent has gone through their legislator, not gotten potentially the feedback that they're looking for. They can go directly through you, and they don't need us to make that happen. I mean, so what if I didn't agree with whatever their complaint is? That's what's so great about, I think, the ombudsman, is that they can go directly to you. They don't need me to make that happen.
To the chair, I believe Representative Gaddis is correct.
Thank you. Representative Keller.
Mr. Chair.
Wait just a second. I believe something is being missed in this section, and I don't want to go too far down the road if it is. But this is talking about cases the ombudsman decides not to investigate. This is not the routine procedure that you are dealing with. The concern that we have is that the model resources, and it's completely up to the ombudsman what is investigated, what isn't investigated, according to the criteria laid out in law carefully. And when there's a decision to not investigate, that's what this refers to.
And I believe, did you have a comment, Ms. Jenkins, Lord Jenkins? Would that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. This is Linda Lord Jenkins.
Yes.
As I read the amendment last night, I had a couple concerns. One of the concerns is whether the decision on the ombudsman's part not to investigate complaints referred to us, if that referred to complaints that were referred to us by the chair of the committee, or if that referred to all complaints that came in the door, because that there tends to be there would be a fairly onerous workload if we were writing letters to each complainant, redacting them as appropriate, and then sending a redacted version to the chair of the committee. That's a fairly time-consuming process, as opposed to if you're referring to those complaints that the committee has asked the ombudsman to investigate. That was one question that I had about the bill. The other question is, or the other comment is, when complainants come to us and they are either referred by their legislator or they have at some point notified their legislator that they are dealing with us, or if they go to their legislator because they're not satisfied with something, how we're conducting our business, we, with permission of the complainant, we can talk to the legislator about the case, but generally the information we provide is just status information, because it doesn't do an investigation any good. They have lots of cooks in the stew, and one of my concerns would be that If we are reporting back to legislators that we're being micromanaged in the manner in which we are conducting investigations, and I guess I would caution against that. We do our best when we find that a legislative office is reviewing a complainant's concern. If the legislative office is involved, we generally back off until that's done, because there's no need to spend our efforts if a legislative office is going forward with a review. It creates confusion on the part of the complainant. It creates confusion on the part of the agency and tends to muddy the waters.
Thank you. Did I see a hand, Representative Gaddis?
And thank you, Ms. Lord Jenkins. I guess this is a question for the amendment sponsor. Clearly, there's a reason that the sponsor brought this amendment up, and I have only to assume that as chair of Reg Review at one time, you had encountered circumstances that had that basically prompted you to bring this up. And I need to be more clear, if you will, on what those circumstances were, what those roadblocks were, and what this would cure.
Reverend Keller.
Yeah, thank you. Rather than describe admin review, I really is in the context of the Ombudsman's Office. We're not trying to fix it. Admin Review Committee with this bill. Okay? The goal, and I appealed to the Ombudsman on this, and the Ombudsman's Representative Beth, several times, that we need to find ways to increase the communication and the reporting, not just boxes to fill, but interaction between the legislative body and the Ombudsman's Office. And I hope that I didn't look at the details of this, but I hope this applies to every complaint that the Ombudsman doesn't address. That's what I intended. And that it gets the communication link is we're looking for a place, and the admin review committee seems to be a good one. We initially played, if you remember, Beth, with the idea of looking at zip codes and having a report of a complaint that come back to the legislator, so you could tie the constituent with the legislator, so there was a link there. And that was a bit of a problem because the zip codes don't line up with the districts, and just a hassle. And it could so easily be just another thing that we're putting down. They check a square and get it done. And by building the this again, we have a vested interest in the legislature of knowing why and how many cases aren't being investigated that people care about out there, and we want to stay in that link. And so this is just a groping. Okay, for a way for the Ombudsman's Office to get information back to us. And having served on Admin Reg Review, I see it as a great spot because it's both houses, you know, that get together, and they don't get together often, but when there's something that comes up, they can respond. It's a way we can respond, Senate, House, you know. So anyway, that's the driver behind it. Thank you.
I would like to follow up, and Representative Keller, thank you, but you didn't answer my question. We're going to try this again.
I'll really get down
to brass tacks. Okay. What prompted you to put this amendment forward? The short story, if you will. What prompted you to put these amendments in? You just didn't, wake up one morning and decide I'm going to put these amendments in because it feels good. I mean, there's something that must have prompted you. There's some story, there's some circumstance that you've run into that said this needs to be cleaned up. This cannot happen again, I'm assuming. So I'm just asking you to kind of clarify without getting in true details, but what prompted you to put these in that you saw that needed a fix?
Thank you again, and I'll try again. I thought I was answering because another way to say it is frustration with knowing and having an interaction with the Ombudsman on cases that have come forward and complaints that went through to the Ombudsman's Office, and I had absolutely no concept of what happened because of the independence and the talking the confidentiality items, I was out of the loop, and I've had constituents that were very concerned and processes that were very frustrating to watch from a distance. We can't fix that. We can't fix the can't change the confidentiality, you know, much, okay, or anything like that. But what we can fix is at least knowing what's going on when things aren't being investigated, because we obviously aren't investigating everyone. That's a long and roundabout answer, but it's very sincerely the truth. I want the Ombudsman's Office to have a better interaction, a better relationship with the legislature, so that we can be faithful to this duty of responding to complaints.
And one more follow-up with the back and forth, and I appreciate Representative Keller for bearing with me as I bear down on him. So what I'm hearing you say, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that there have been circumstances that you've worked with the Ombudsman that you really did not feel getting the constituents okay to work with the Ombudsman so that they have okayed that from the confidentiality, that there was no response back to you and or the constituent on follow-up, and so that's what prompted you to put this amendment in, because constituents were not being dealt with and they had given you the okay to work with the Ombudsman, and even the Ombudsman still did not work with the constituent or yourself, so you felt that this be a necessary fix based on that.
Yes, but I want to be very clear, Representative Lynn, if I might, through the chair.
Please.
I want to be very clear that that is because the Ombudsman was following the statutes that we laid out for, in this case, her. In other words, it is no, they weren't necessarily in any way, shape, or form hiding anything. I'm not accusing them of being inefficient. I'm just saying there's nothing that we have provided in statute that enforces whatever level of communication interaction we can get. In other words, it is not a criticism of the Ombudsman's Office. It's a criticism of the statute that we've got there that doesn't provide a mechanism for detailed, reporting.
So. Reverend Gannis?
Through Mr. Chair, and that is not what I heard from Ms. Leibowitz. I heard her indicate that given the release of confidentiality that the Ombudsman could work with the legislature and the constituent if need be, if the constituent okayed that. So I thought I'm hearing that in statute they already have that opportunity, unnecessary to put another one in. And I'll stop belaboring it. Thank you.
That's great. I think we have Representative Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just following right off that, I think the difference right now is that the individual, and in this case we would maybe say the word constituent, has to initiate it with the legislator's office. This would allow the legislator to initiate it. So that is the difference. And just to be clear, right now, if you decline a case, Ms. Leibowitz, and it's closed, and the constituent, and we'll say a constituent, comes to our office, and we contact you. You have not already asked for disclosing their name. So do you recontact the individual and say, you know, I've had a request from your legislator. Will you give permission for disclosure of your name? Do you take that step, and then we're able to work on something together?
Ms. Leibowitz?
To the chair. Is we would need to take that step, because unless the complainant has already, you know, indicated, you know, some reason that they would want to be in contact with their legislator, you know, if they did not have any legislative involvement when we initially looked at their complaint, and we hear from a legislative office asking about it, you know, saying so-and-so has contacted us, we want to talk about it. Yes, we would need to recontact the complainant as fast as we possibly could and say, you know, legislative office called us. Do you want us to, give us permission to talk about your complaint? And then we probably would have that permission, and we would go ahead and talk about the complaint to the extent that we are able to, given the restrictions on our ability to release confidential information, which does come into play most prominently with Office of Children's Services cases, where we have access to OCS records, and we often have access to information that will allow us to evaluate the complaint, but depending on who the complainant is, it may be information that we can't give the complainant or the legislator.
Follow-up?
Okay. Quick follow-up.
Okay. And so right now, if the individual initiates it, we have a way for the communication to occur, so that's to be clear. We don't have a way for the communication to occur with a legislator initiating it because they wouldn't have the name of the person. But one of the reasons the sponsor said something about it was important for legislators to know the number of cases being declined and why. Are you already reporting that to us annually, the number of cases declined and why?
To the chair and Representative Hughes, yes, we already have an annual report, and I'll be happy to defer discussion of that to Ombudsman Lord Jenkins. But I would also like to add that we have the ability to provide public summaries of closed complaints. We do that routinely for the director of OCS, for instance, and we could certainly do that on request to any legislative office. And those do not provide the identifying information of complainants, but they do provide the basic allegation of the complaint, the agency or agencies involved, and a summary of the complaint's closure. You know, a typical one for Department of Corrections would be, you know, complaint alleges, you know, let's say lack of, we've had some that involved, you know, lack of recreational time. And, you know, basically the administrative segregation inmates are not getting to go out for enough recreation. And, you know, we'll look at that. And sometimes the response back to the complainant will be, have you actually filed a grievance? Have you actually tried to resolve this within the department before calling the ombudsman's office? If there's no evidence of that and it's not an emergency, we will usually decline the complaint on that basis. And the public summary of the complaint will indicate, yes, that's why it was declined.
Thank you. Reverend Christ Tompkins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Both with this section and Section 5, I have difficulty accepting them, mostly because I feel it's kind of already come out in discussion. I'm not sure there's a problem we need to fix, or if there's a problem with the Admin Reg Review Committee, it seems as though they already have a tool in their toolbox, and that's a subpoena, and that tool is the equivalent of a sledgehammer as far as getting attention and getting the information they need. And if the Reg Review Committee has declined to use that tool, that's their prerogative. But moreover, with all three of these sections, while I appreciate the intent, I think it sort of comes down to a fundamental perspective on the ombudsman. And does the ombudsman work for the people, or does the ombudsman work for the legislature? And I believe the ombudsman works for the people. That's my understanding. That's what an ombudsman does. And the ombudsman has no obligation to report to legislators or the legislature. And the legislature wants to create its own investigatory agency, which I think it already kind of has with Ledge Audit. It can, but the ombudsman should not be brought into the circus that can sometimes be this institution. And, I mean, when there are comments about we can't fix confidentiality, which came up in discussion recently, I mean, I don't think there's anything to fix about confidentiality. And when it comes to independence, I don't think there's anything to fix about there being independence associated with the ombudsman. So I'm just at risk of, you know, running through another 2 hours with this committee.
We're going to take longer than we need to take.
Sure. I just state that I have difficulty going along with these three sections, and perhaps they'll get sort of a more thorough consideration in judiciary, especially because I think we've all been learned everything we could have imagined wanting to learn about the ombudsman at this point already. So maybe it's just a fact of fatigue. But I just go ahead and state that regarding these three sections.
Well, the ombudsman, as I understand it, is a creation of the legislature.
Absolutely, it's in the legislative branch, and it's in the legislative branch to preserve independence of the ombudsman from the executive branch, but it doesn't work for the legislature or legislators, and I don't think that's its intended purpose, even though it's in our branch. It's in our branch to preserve independence. Or that's my understanding, and perhaps the ombudsman can comment.
Thank you. Mr. Pound?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, first of all, I think one of the things we need to clear up is that we have an admin reg review committee in all three of these sections, primarily for a couple of reasons. One, it's a year-round committee, and this committee will not be here this summer. All right, and it's also a joint committee, so that it's half representing, it represents both bodies of the House, so that information that's provided to that committee makes it into both houses easily. And that was part of the intent of using admin reg review committee over any other. Well, we could have said judiciary committee, but the judiciary Representative Keller is not working for the judiciary committee in the summertime, technically. So that's the purpose of, and I wanted to clarify, that's why this committee is committee of choice. It's an ideal choice without going into budget and audit, which is limited to budgets and audits. I mean, that's what they do. Their investigative authority pretty much stops there. Also, the fact is that in their decision not to investigate, and the ombudsman commented about adding requirements for having to report, for the most part, they can do that orally. It does not require a written report, and Section 5 specifically states under existing language that the report can be oral. It does not have to be a written report, even to the legislature, unless it's specifically requested to be in writing.
Thank you. Let's go on to Section 5.
To the chair, this is Beth Leibowitz.
Go ahead, Ms. Leibowitz.
Okay, thank you. As I understand this, the language seems to have a glitch or two in it, but it appears to basically be that if the chair of the Administrative Regulation Review Committee requests for any declined complaint, the ombudsman shall state in writing the reasons for declining that complaint. And I'm not entirely sure what this is intended for, in that we can already provide a basic summary of why we have declined a complaint, and we can provide those routinely. If the Administrative Reg Review Committee chair would like to have that, we're happy to send those over. I do have to clarify that we cannot simply provide a copy of a letter that we send to the complainant in many cases. For instance, I've seen quite a number of child support cases, and in a letter to a complainant explaining why we are closing out a complaint about child support, usually there will be a very candid discussion of the child support debt and those issues, and that information is information we can give the complainant, but it is not information we would be giving out to the general public. The complainant can give it out if the complainant chooses, but that's not information that we would be forwarding on a complainant's behalf.
Mr. Pound?
Mr. Chair, we're talking about complaints that are being denied, that are not being investigated in this section. We're not talking about complaints that have been, that are ongoing and have confidential information in them.
Okay, Representative Gaddis?
Through the chair. And then I guess I asked, are there complaints that are not being investigated that somehow somebody knew about that said, hold it, there's a complaint here and we're not happy with the ombudsman because they refused to look at it. They've not done what they needed to for the people. That's why we're going to put this in legislation now, and that so we will make this fix so that the ombudsman can't just arbitrarily turn somebody down. And when I ask for potential examples or what prompted this, I'm really not hearing anything. I'm hearing the fact that it could happen, it might, we want to keep it from happening. But I'm a proponent, if it's not broke, let's not fix it type. So I am still struggling with that.
Through the chair, Representative Goddard, part of the reason is because we're not receiving the information of what's being denied.
Could you repeat that, please?
Through the chair, Representative Goddard, part of the reason is because we are not receiving information on what's being denied. I mean, you can't cite something if you don't have it.
Mr. Chair, and Mr. Pound, that's so profound. It's almost it's difficult for me to respond to that. But you're absolutely right. We could relate to a lot of things that if we don't know, then we can't deal with it. You're absolutely right. But I have not heard any compelling reason sitting here today that there is a problem. And certainly I would expect to hear from a constituent that said, you know, I tried to get a hold of the ombudsman. Here is a compelling reason that they should have investigated it. They didn't. Representative Gaddis, you need to get on that and deal with the ombudsman because this is a special problem. And if I hear about it over and over, then it becomes compelling, and I'll be sitting here in front of this committee saying there's a special problem. But I'm not hearing that, and I guess that's where I was coming from. So thank you.
This is more of a preventive measure?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gaddis, yes, it is more preventive.
Okay. Let's talk about this later because I want to get on the less controversial parts of this bill that involve the Bar Association. Representative Houston, then we're going to proceed.
Yeah, and I just want what Representative Gaddis just said, that her office, and I haven't received either, so I'm not aware, but I want to ask the sponsor, have you received, without giving specifics, have you received calls from constituents concerned that their cases were declined when they should not have been? Are you aware that other legislators have received such calls? I'd like to know whether that's happened.
I have never received any information about any investigation that was declined, and that's part of my concern, because we want to get a scope on what is not is being missed out there, you know. So if I would like to Ombudsman Jenkins online, and I'd like her to respond to talk to us about how they report cases they don't investigate. And I think they have already put on the record that they really investigate every legitimate one that comes to them. And so when I say a report, that's a judgment call. And we have the criteria from which for the ones in statute, the ones they don't investigate. So maybe a clearer report on the ones they don't investigate would solve the problem. I don't know, but we don't have the annual report in front of me, so I would like to hear what Linda has to say.
Linda, would you like to respond or comment?
Mr. Chairman, this is Linda Lord Jenkins. Thank you. The ombudsman, you will find that if you get comments, you might get comments from someone who calls to say the ombudsman would not investigate my complaint, or the ombudsman did not do anything when I complained to them. That often translates in a number of ways. It may translate to the ombudsman declining to investigate a complaint because the complainant had not used the existing grievance appeal process. It may translate to the ombudsman saying, this complaint, this situation happened 10 years ago. That's too old under our regulatory time frames. And we decline complaints like that because things change. Regs change, statutes change, staff changes, policies and procedures change, records are disposed of pursuant to records retention. There are any number of reasons why we might decline a complaint. Someone might not have sufficient personal interest. And we will explain this to people, and I have seen it happen repeatedly where you might send a 5-page letter explaining why we can't do something, and what it is translated in the complainant's mind is into a 72-point word, which is no. So that's why we might not investigate a complaint. We document that in our closing summaries, which we would be more than happy to provide the public versions of the closing summaries, which have a case number associated with them to the Regulation Review Committee, to any and all legislators who are interested in this. My concern has been that we might be required to document in a letter each and every one of these, which is when I use the term onerous. So we let them know, but you may not get the whole story, and I have seen that over and over when we get calls from legislators. One other point that I would like to make, and this actually refers back to a discussion of Section 4 and the discussion of if a legislator is contacted by a constituent and they contact us. Under our statute and I believe in our confidentiality requirement, if we had a complainant who went to a legislator and complained or talked about their case with them, that does not in and of itself give us a waiver of confidentiality. The complainant would have to expressly tell us that they waive confidentiality as to that legislator or any legislators. But I have had several instances where individuals have come to us, we've given them an answer, and they have then gone to their legislators, and we have asked the complainant, do you authorize us to talk to the legislator or legislators? And they have declined. So in that instance, if a legislator contacts us and a complainant does not give us the express permission to talk to that legislator or legislators, we would not be able to discuss their case with you.
Thank you. We have somebody like to, do we have trying to have Ree Sailors online or any place or in the audience? Okay, I'm looking online. You're right there. Would you please come up and make any comments you'd like to make? Please identify yourself and make your comments.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Ree Sailors. I'm Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Health and Social Services. I wanted to take the opportunity to make a few remarks about the bill. I'm not sure I want to wade into the fray here in terms of the three sections that you've been talking about most recently. I will share with you, however, that the annual report, I actually went into the latest annual report online and found out that there had been, out of the 200,000 people we serve in Alaska, 290 complaints against the department. And of those, 194 were against OCS. 100 of those were released by virtue of it being a court decision or not appropriate for the ombudsman. 15 more of those were resolved as just being resolved or inappropriate for the ombudsman to enter into, which left 75 cases that were considered by the ombudsman. I say these because we have had an ongoing working relationship with the Office of the Ombudsman. The fact that we do serve 200,000 people in Alaska gives us plenty of ample opportunity to be exposed to complaints, and we all know that human beings work for our department and we're capable of making mistakes. So, which raises the ultimate question to us of why we need to make the changes that are proposed here, particularly as they relate to our grantees and contractors, which were largely eliminated when you took up the amendment last meeting to remove the behavioral health aspects that were in there, but in our opinion didn't go far enough because you kept in the Division of Juvenile Justice into that category as well, and we don't think they belong there for several reasons. One of which is that we do not contract or have grants with anyone to run anything in the way of juvenile justice facilities. And so we're kind of talking about something that doesn't exist. The statutory language is pretty old. We don't know what a work camp is. We haven't seen one. Talked to employees who've been with us 17 plus years. They've never seen one, don't know what it is. So we would like to have your amendment just stretch out a little bit longer and take out the references to juvenile detention facilities, homes, et cetera, that remain in the bill. The other piece that remains, it has to do with grantees or contractors who would determine eligibility for services. And my understanding is it applies to all state agencies. Our opinion in the department is that we are ultimately responsible for these actions and our grantees and their actions. And we fear a couple of things in terms of what the bill has done, hopefully inadvertently. By defining grantees and contractors as agencies separate, it creates a situation where, under the definitions of the bill, they are an agency. And under the requirements of the bill not to release information, we question whether or not the ombudsman would actually be able to release information about one of those grantee agencies to us so that we could have our ability to investigate and sanction and take regulatory actions interfered with. So we're kind of left in this little void space where suddenly now we're defining these people as not grantees and contractors alone. They have become an agency under this definition, and therefore the requirement that nothing be revealed out of their investigation of an agency means potentially they cannot reveal that to us when we have the enforcement powers. So I think this is a technical issue that we fear a lot. We do have the capability to go into our grantees. We have, in some instances, we license them. And so we have licensing authority. We have obviously we're the funder. So we have strings attached to the funding that is received from us. And we also have the capability to bring in multidisciplinary teams and to work quickly, which we also see sometimes a time lag in from the point in time when an investigation might begin through the ombudsman and when an actual report might come out of that. So we would like, at a minimal, if you really feel you have to create this potential for triangulation, among other things, by separating our grantees from us, so to speak, and which bifurcates, I think, the accountability and the responsibility that we feel we have to the resources that the legislature appropriates to us and the requirements that were given from you to provide services in the state, whether it's through contract grantees or ourselves direct. So I think that's one of our large concerns about this. It does create a new wall. It does create a new category of agencies, and it potentially interferes with our ability to take advantage of a situation where the ombudsman would go in. If you want to insist on keeping that in, then we would request very strongly that we be notified when the ombudsman either receives the complaint or initiates an investigation so that we can move quickly into the situation. And like I said, there are times in the past where we have worked cooperatively with the Office of the Ombudsman on issues. We've also had situations which the Ombudsman was totally unaware of, for instance, out of state, where we had placed, this is part of the bill that you did take out, but it was still nonetheless a grantee or contractor we were involved with. Out of state, we were able to send in sort of a SWAT team, if you wish. We took up residence with them for a week, and we also began to coordinate with the local authorities in the state of Texas. So we have a certain enforcement powers that we don't want to have delayed or interfered by virtue of this confidentiality situation. The other issues that remain, and again, we'd also, I want to go back to the Division of Juvenile Justice, too. It's sort of hooked on there with corrections, and the philosophy in the state has for quite some time now been one of services, treatment, and building a sense of responsibility for and accountability within these kids. And so we think we're also dealing with treatment that involves, again, medical records, medical treatment, psychiatric treatment, et cetera. And so those records are within our own facilities. And based on some testimony that was given earlier, there were questions, I think, Representative Hughes, by you about personal health information and the security of that. Our fear is that there should be some provision that is consistent with HIPAA that goes a little bit deeper than, I guess, the given interpretation. I think we heard in testimony before that if someone had requested assistance from the ombudsman, that was considered implied consent for access to their personal health information. HIPAA, the federal law, does allow for people to have access to personal health information if it's required in statute, if they're required in statute. However, we worry a little bit about sort of the interpretation stretch that it takes with the existing language in terms of the ability to go into personal health information without notice or consent of the individual. And I think it would be wise on the part of the state, not only from a protection of the right of privacy of individuals for their personal health information, but also as a risk management action, because as you may or may not be aware, the state of Alaska has been fined by the federal government Department of Justice Office of Civil Rights in excess of $1 million for a questionable breach of information around personal health information, and there is a movement across the country to take very strong regulatory action against states as well as private entities relative to HIPAA violations. We would hate to have the ombudsman as an entity of state government inadvertently trigger another fine for the state. We actually are under a mandate for corrective action. We actually have monitors. I like to call them hall monitors. But we have actually had to contract with monitors to come in and watch what we do and make sure all changes are being made, et cetera, kind of thing. So I think it's important that, most importantly, in my own personal opinion, is that for the right of privacy, for the protection of privacy, there should be a requirement to get a very explicit consent to access personal health records. And then I think I probably can stop at that point, although I think the attorney privilege piece is of concern to us. We feel like we have a right to get our own counsel, and I think the example that was given was once upon a time we asked an agency why they had done what they did, and they said their attorneys told them, advised them, and they said, show us, and they said no. My own opinion is, having been an investigator of things in my own past history, is an investigation doesn't need to turn on a confidential advice memo from an attorney to a client. The evidence is there, the facts are there, the law is there, and the availability of interpretation without the benefit of somebody else's counsel is certainly available to be made. So I think those are my initial comments, and I'm happy to respond to any questions you may have.
Okay, I'm going to have Ms. Leibowitz. Would you like to make a quick response?
This is Beth Leibowitz for the Office of the Ombudsman. To the chair, is I'm going to take the last bit of that first. Is the section dealing with attorney-client privileged information is phrased the way it is because it is not a mandate that we obtain that information. It is an option for the agency. We cannot compel the offering up of that type of information, and we do not want to do that. We would like to, that section is intended to function so that an agency can give us that information without it coming back to cause them damage in unrelated litigation or in another context. If we ask the agency what their assistant attorney general told them and they say, none of your business, well, that's how it is. And yes, we will pull what facts we can and move on with the investigation. Pretty much as Ms. Saylor's explained, yes, you can go ahead and investigate without getting at that material. Sometimes it's helpful. Sometimes the agency would actually prefer to be frank with us about what it is they got by way of advice. But that is an option, not a requirement.
Thank you for the clarification. Appreciate that.
If you move it, if you move it.
Okay. Any questions on that? Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Mr. Pound, we need to go over any other things on this CS?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Jim Pound for Representative Keller's office. We have a typo in this amendment that needs to be repaired. I mean, unless we're going to, you know, if we're going to move this forward. If you go to page 2, line 24, after the word committee or, it says to any other complainant, that needs to be deleted. Because the language, the way this is written, and like I said, it has to be a typo. I mean, if I'm a complainant, the way this is written, and Representative Keller has a complaint, technically, you know, I could get access to it. So, I mean, it's just an error on behalf of. If we have time.
So. Mr. Chair.
Representative Keller.
If I could, I would propose that amendment. Page 2, line 24, after delete the comma, after committee.
Chair? What?
Sorry, there's still an objection to the version.
Yeah, an objection.
Your
you're
objection
right.
to the
you.
Discussion.
Okay.
Thank you. I was
just,
I was here. Thank you.
Would everybody start over here so we
can. Yeah, I'll
pull
it back.
I think I had the objection.
You did.
Yeah, I'll remove it.
And just for clarity, anybody can make an objection after this too. I'm not trying to railroad anything here. Page 2, line 24. After the word or, delete everything after the word or on page, line 24 and page 2, through after the word complaint on line 25, conceptual. Just that was said.
Would you read that?
So it would read to the chair if requested by the chair of the admin review committee or if requested by the complainant. That's the way it should read.
Okay. Reverend Gadsden.
Okay. He clarified. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Brown.
Mr. Chair, that's all I have.
I do? Okay, fine. Thank you very much. We're going to try.
Was there
any objection to that? No objection. That'd be amendment number one, I suppose.
Yeah.
Is that correct? Amendment number one. Okay. Okay, I'm going to move on now. We're getting short on time, but I would like to at least get an opening comment from some of the legal types here. We're probably, this is not the Judiciary Committee, you know, this is the State Affairs Committee, so we may hold any debate, if there is such a thing, over to the Judiciary Committee, but I still would like to get a very short introduction from the legal types in the room and on the line. Representative Hughes.
And before we go on to that, I don't want to open anything up because I know we need to keep moving. And I would be fine if this were addressed in Judiciary, but I do have concerns that we need to tighten up the medical records when speaking with...
Well, would you get that last part? I didn't hear you.
That we need to tighten up the medical records regarding privacy in speaking with Ms. Leibowitz when records are... medical records are... they get them, they... They retain, they'll use what they need, but they also don't destroy them except on an annual basis. And so there's information they're keeping that they don't necessarily need for an extended period. And I do believe, and if the Judiciary would want to address that, that's fine. But that is something, if we're going to be moving this out today, I don't have it prepared to bring forward, but I would ask the Judiciary would consider that, and I'd be happy to work with the Judiciary
that. Comment from the Judiciary Chair.
Right. And just a clarification. Are you saying that Beth Leibowitz will come forward with potential language to fix that?
Well, I actually haven't spoken with her about it. I just did understand that they destroy things annually, files that they don't need, and something as personal medical information, whatever they don't particularly need, I believe ought to be destroyed immediately, and they shouldn't be retaining it for a year.
Okay. I'll commit to the fact that we will certainly consider it. You'll have to help me make sure that there's a vehicle, either an amendment or proposed language or something that we can.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I think I'm going to go, I don't know which one to go to first, Quinlan Steiner or Steve Van Gore. I'm going to go to Steve Van Gore. Are you online? Would you make a very brief comment, because we're going to, if there's any debate on this, extended debate, I'd like to reserve that for the Judiciary Committee, which is more in tune with legal issues than we are here in a state affair. But maybe a few short introductory remarks or any concerns you might have. Mr. Van Gore?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Keller, members of the committee, the bar appreciates the opportunity to address this policy consideration of the bill once again. The disciplinary process in Alaska is working. It's strictly supervised by the Alaska Supreme Court and the bar's disciplinary board. Multiple levels of review are already in the disciplinary enforcement rules concerning investigation and prosecution. A complainant, a person making a complaint, and it frankly can be anybody, who's dissatisfied with the decision by the bar not to open an investigation, can have that decision reviewed by a disciplinary board member. We call that the board liaison. If the complainant is still dissatisfied, he or she can file an original application for direct review by the Supreme Court. And Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that has definitely happened. In a similar way, a decision to dismiss a grievance after investigation can be reviewed by a member of a hearing panel. And still, if the complainant is still not satisfied, he or she can petition the Supreme Court for review of that decision. When the rules of disciplinary enforcement were revised in the 1980s and public members were added to the Board of Governors by the legislature, public members have become involved at two critical stages of the disciplinary process. They are members of hearing panels, which hear evidence and make findings, conclusions, and recommendations. Those recommendations go to the disciplinary board, and three of the 12 members of the disciplinary board are public members, and most importantly, these are public members subject to confirmation by the legislature. Every legislative audit conducted of the Bar Association since the 1980s has recommended the continuation of the Bar Association Board and its responsibility for the investigation and prosecution of attorney misconduct. In short, the system isn't broken. But Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it would be broken if the amendments affecting the Bar Association are adopted. First, lawyers often have to explain what was done on a client's behalf, and that involves confidential information. But clients could not be sure that their confidential information would be protected since it would be subject to review outside of the disciplinary process. There are two important obligations that a lawyer has to a client, loyalty and confidentiality. But if that confidentiality is breached, lawyers or clients would have no recourse if a non-lawyer disclosed that confidential information outside of the disciplinary process. Even though the ombudsman staff includes three lawyers, it's important to point out that none of these lawyers are in an attorney-client relationship with the person making the complaint. And none of these lawyers are specifically authorized access to this information under the Supreme Court's procedural rules. Second, the bar could not comply with a request for an investigation because of those requirements imposed on the process by rules adopted by the court. Legal Services Director Doug Gardner confirmed the court's inherent authority in this area in his memo of March 21, 2013, last year. In short, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the Ombudsman's Office would be frustrated, the Bar Association would be frustrated, and the bar would literally be stuck in the middle of this situation. Respectfully, the bar requests that the committee amend the CS by either stating that the Bar Association is not an agency for the purposes of the Ombudsman's jurisdiction, or listing the Bar Association as exempt in the list of officials contained in the bill that are not subject to Ombudsman's jurisdiction or investigation. That would answer the Ombudsman's question regarding jurisdiction that she posed last year and would avoid the problems I just identified. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your concern. We're not going to debate this here because, again, it's more of a judiciary matter and as a state affairs matter, but I will quickly, Representative Gaddis.
Very, very quickly, and thank you. I wanted to go on record that I did have an amendment and that I have agreed to send that amendment up to judiciary.
To be discussed there.
To be discussed there, and so I thank the Judiciary Committee for doing that. Thank you.
Well, again, we have a commitment from the Judiciary Chair.
Yeah.
To discuss this thoroughly, right? Thank you again. Quinlan Steiner. Do you have a very short statement you'd like to make?
Certainly.
You're online?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My name is Quinlan Steiner. I'm the
Turn it up, please.
I'm the public. This is Quinlan Steiner. I'm the public defender for the state of Alaska.
Thank you.
And I'd like to just comment on one perhaps unintended consequence of giving the ombudsman the authority to investigate the Bar Association. It would effectively undermine the review of agency attorneys' conduct with respect to our client's complaint. Presently now, if a client has a concern about the conduct of their attorney, they can complain to me, and I can evaluate it, where I would have full access to all the attorney-client confidences that are necessary to review that complaint. Or they can complain to the bar. When a client complains to the Bar Association will ask for a response from agency attorneys, and presently we fully comply and include all attorney-client confidences because it's permissible under the rules to reveal that client confidence in responding to a bar complaint. If, however, that information can then be further released to an entity outside of the bar, we would no longer be able to fully respond. This would have the effect of undermining the review of the client's complaint. There'd really only be one avenue for them to complain about attorney conduct, and that would be by complaining to the public defender. I think having this level of review and full candid review is a benefit to the criminal justice system as a whole and certainly to clients. And I think that's worth considering when evaluating how this is executed. I'd certainly be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Okay. We're going to hopefully continue this discussion in the next committee of referral. Anybody else online would like to testify? Anybody else in the room would like to testify? We're going to close the public testimony, bring it to the committee for a discussion, if any. Representative Hughes.
Thank you, Chair. I just, when it moves to judiciary, the...
And speak up a little bit, please.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. When it moves to judiciary, a couple things that I hope will be addressed. One thing in the letter from Mr. Van Gore, is that the correct name? He mentioned, he has on page 2 of the one dated February 24th, he talks about the ombudsman initiating enforcement action. And as we've learned, ombudsman does not have enforcement action. So I hope that he would address that with the Judiciary Committee. And also I noticed as I was reading in the rules, the Alaska Rule of Professional Conduct, I did note that there were some rules that perhaps would apply, and I don't have it right in front of me, and I was showing it to some others before the committee began, but it talked about in situations where there were any allegations regarding the attorney, and also there was that disclosure could be allowed if it was required by law. So it seemed to me that there were some things that need to be addressed in the Judiciary Committee regarding those rules of professional conduct. So I would request that be done. Thank you.
Representative Keller, speaking not only a member of this committee, but as a chair of the Judiciary Committee, any comments you'd like to make as far as what you intend to discuss, debate, or make decisions on in the Judiciary Committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I commit to a thorough discussion, all issues that come up, and thorough review by the Judiciary Committee. Obviously, I just want to point on the record, this is not my bill. and my interest is on behalf of the legislature and my peers, and I certainly am not trying to it may appear that way, but I'm not trying to. I don't think I have a real personal dog in the fight. It's just that I believe this was been put on the record this morning is incredibly valuable for us. I mean, we had a clear statement, you know, that we can request information. All legislators can from the ombudsman's office, and I think that's incredibly valuable. I can't speak to exactly what the Judiciary Committee will do with the bill, but I promise that we will review every issue that comes up.
I would point out that there are two attorneys on the Judiciary Committee, and neither one of them are timid. Reverend Christ Tompkins.
I'd like to circle back to sections 3 through 5, if I may.
To which?
3 through 5.
Okay.
I appreciate that this will, the whole bill will be re-reviewed by the Judiciary Committee, but it'd be my preference that the bill be reviewed without these sections, and so that they can undergo the scrutiny that just happened right now, rather than they're already there and assumed to be part of the bill when Judiciary starts their deliberations. Okay. So, which is to say, I'd be interested in.
There may be, you know, the options we have here in moving about, you know, do pass, not pass, amend, you know, no recommendation.
Ray, I appreciate that. I'd be interested in offering an amendment to the bill that removes the language in sections 3 through 5 of the CS.
Before. You want to do an amendment now?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Well, I can scratch it out on a piece of paper.
Well, what do you call it, a conceptual amendment?
Sure. Well, I'll offer a conceptual amendment to remove the language added to the CS, or that's included in the CS, that is included in sections 3 through 5 that the committee
objects.
Okay. Any discussion on that? Representative Gaddis?
Yes, I just want to clarify. Representative Christ Tompkins is stating that he would like to, if you will, strike out section 3, 4, and 5, if I'm correct? Hearing correctly.
That's it.
Okay. And I may continue on.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You had no idea that I wanted to. So I guess I want to speak to that. I think I've been fairly clear as we spoke that I don't think this is necessary information. As we spoke about reg review and so on and so forth, I will be supporting this amendment and just wanted to be clear about that.
Okay. Reverend Keller?
Yeah, I will maintain my objection. And, again, this is not a fight. It's just that I think it's a real elegant fix to a couple problems. So.
All right, thank you. Objection? Reverend Hughes, I want to go to roll call vote here, fast
right,
I can.
I know you do. I don't support them the way they presently are, and I have not yet really fully come to the point where I'm ready to make a policy call. My question is to the sponsor of the amendment and to the chair of Judiciary, whether this would be part of the conversation if we were to strike it now, would the conversation, because I think there might be some value in continuing this discussion that these three sections are addressing in Judiciary. So if we struck it, would you still have that conversation is my question.
Reverend Keller.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Hughes. That's precisely why I would maintain my objection. I think that it's a little bit too broad of a brush just to take them all out. Leaving them in there, I think, will ensure a robust discussion on this. Judiciary Committee is going to hate me, but I don't anticipate that they will move out of Judiciary as written. You know, I think there will be changes. I expect that, and I will encourage it, actually, because there's parts that I wonder about, too. So, sure.
So just to clarify, if we remove them, would you still have the discussion, or do you need them in there to have the discussion?
I would prefer to have them in there. It could happen either way, but that's why I'm holding my objection in there. I would prefer the language move forward into Judiciary as it's been proposed today, and we will review it from there. That's my preference.
Right here. Follow up. And so just to put on the record, I'm going to vote against the amendment, not because I fully agree with everything that's in there, but because I believe that it needs to be continued to be discussed in the Judiciary. And for instance, one of the things I don't agree with is the fact that the admin reg chair has the sole discretion. I think that should be, if it were decided to be kept in there, it should be by vote of that committee. So there are different things, and I'm not sure all three of them. There's pieces that I might agree with, so I will be voting against the amendment.
Thank you. Okay. Since you're the sponsor of the amendment, I'm going to go to her first and let you do a wrap-up. Representative Gaddis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I would like to speak to the robust conversation that I think that we did have here. And I think that there are parts that Representative Hughes brought up that I think that may or may not be added in as another amendment. But quite frankly, I believe that we have robustly responded to these amendments. And that's why I would support the amendment to the amendment sponsor, then, you know, it's time to take them out. It's time to start all over again, and I can appreciate the sponsor stating that he's looking at, and he even admitted that there are parts in there that need a relook at.
Well, he's not the sponsor of the bill.
No.
He's the sponsor of the amendment, not the amendment to the amendment. So I would say Representative Keller has admitted that there are some things that need to be worked on and cleaned up. So. So, thank you, Mr. Chair.
So he's guilty. Okay.
He's guilty.
Okay. And a wrap up. Reverend Kreiton, and a wrap up.
Sure. Well, if we're all in agreement that this bill should be cleaned up, to me, it would be logical that we should start with less, and that there should be a burden to prove every change to the bill rather than have those changes included in the bill and then work to subtract. I mean, especially if we know that all these additions are already troublesome. It doesn't make sense to me that we would include troublesome sections in a bill that we're going to pass out of committee. It makes more sense to start without them and prove each one of them is worthy and meritorious and should be indeed the letter of the law. So I feel this approach of taking these three sections out as a more conservative and cautious and deliberate approach to trying to produce the best possible bill for the Judiciary Committee.
So you are conservative?
Very much so, Mr. Chair.
Do you maintain your objection?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, call the roll, please. Now, let's state the conceptual amendment is to remove those three sections. Okay, call the roll, please.
Conceptual Amendment 2 to Version T of HB 127, Representative Millett. Not present. Representative Christ Tompkins?
Yes.
Representative Gaddis?
Yes.
Representative Hughes?
No.
Representative Isaacson? Not present. Representative Keller?
No.
Chair Lynn?
No.
Two yay, three nay.
Okay. Conceptual amendment number 2 did not pass. Is there a motion to move the bill to the next committee referral?
Mr. Chair, I'd move CS for House Bill 127, State Affairs, LS-0088 Tango, as amended, out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Okay. Any objection? Without objection, the bill moves. I want to thank everybody. I think it's a very interesting bill, and I get the chance to hear it again myself. And Reverend Gernberg may have some amendments. He usually does on something. So the schedule for next week had not yet been put together, so I don't have an announcement of what that is going to be. I'd like to thank everybody who here and called in, and we are adjourned right on time at 10 o'clock.